Welcome to Eye on Horror. I'm your host, James J. Edwards, and with me is Jacob Davison and Jonathan Correa. How you doing, guys?
Doing good.
Yeah, doing pretty well.
All right, this is our first episode, hopefully of many. So let's jump into some news, and then we'll let you guys know who the heck we are. So what's going on today?
Well, just announced was that Rob Zombie's new film is just started, actually. It's supposed to be the third in the Firefly family movies. You know, Devil's Rejects. What's this new one called? Three from Hell.
Three from Hell, yes.
Yeah.
And all he did, he tweeted a picture of the director's chair. So I don't think we know that much. Because at the end of Devil's Rejects, everyone dies.
Yeah.
So it'll be interesting to see if it's a prequel, or is it the afterlife, or is he going to do... I mean, it'll be interesting to see what he does. Rob Zombie, for me, is one of those filmmakers that I wish he would work with a writer, because I love his aesthetic style. It's just where his films falter for me is in the story. And the one exception to that is Devil's Rejects, though. I love the Devil's Rejects.
Yeah,
so the movie's solid.
It's his one solid film. Because, I mean, House of a Thousand Corpses was a lot of fun. You know, there's a lot of ridiculousness to it. And it had some, like, pretty decent world building, especially with the Firefly family, which a lot of that wasn't really, like, expanded on in Devil's Rejects, which is what I liked about Devil's Rejects, is that it just focused on those three. But his other films just, I think it is, you're right, just needs at least somebody to just bounce ideas off of and more round it out more, because by the time he came out with 31, I was just kind of like, I'm all set at this point.
Yeah, a lot of it's just been style over substance. And, like 31, I guess in some ways could be comparable to Devil's Rejects, but it just didn't quite have the heart.
31 is rough. I like Lords of Salem.
Me too.
It's funny though, 'cause I don't remember liking it. I remember, a while back thinking that it was bad. I'm like, I'm going to give this another try. So I watched it and I liked it. And I went back to my review to see what I didn't like about it. And the review was positive. So I don't remember liking it. In fact, I remember not liking it. Maybe I was poisoned by popular opinion. But it was kind of funny that I went back and I'm like, what didn't I like about this? I'm like, oh, I did like it. But 31 is 31 is just kind of a mess.
Yeah.
Either way, pretty interested to see where this one goes, because he has mentioned talking about wanting to go back to those characters or doing something else with the Firefly family for a while. Just could be anything.
Still can't be worse than H2, in my opinion. few films can fuck up as much as that one. Like, everything he did right with the first one just was gone instantly with that one.
The first Halloween, he kind of didn't... he just expanded on Michael Myers' childhood, but he pretty much followed Carpenter's vision, and then he just went off the rails for two.
Yeah.
To be honest, I never saw two.
Keep it that way.
Well, you're not missing much, unless you're a Rob Zombie completist.
That's the point.
Speaking of Halloween, more great news. First of all, they are making a new Halloween, which is great. They're kind of retconning the sequels. And what is it? Jason Blum is not only producing, but he teased that we should be seeing we won't be seeing it, but they'll be seeing a rough cut in the next few weeks, too, right?
Yeah, sometime in the next 6 weeks. I believe it was Jason Blum who tweeted it. He said that they're going to see a cut within 6 weeks. You know, again, they are going to see it. It's not going to, you know, then they'll tear it apart. But it'll at least be an assembly, so.
Yep, and they've still got the October release set for this year, so I'm pretty excited about that, because I don't even know when the last time we got an actual Halloween movie around Halloween.
Resurrection? No.
I don't think Resurrection was Halloween. Was
no?
Halloween. I think Resurrection might have been, you know, like May.
Hmm.
I don't know, though.
And the other thing to point out is that they did reassemble a lot of the original cast, like Jamie Lee Curtis is back, and I am very interested in the artistic voices behind the movie. It's being, I believe, co-written and co-directed by Dan McBride and
David Gordon Green, right?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, remember, Jordan Peele was a comedy filmmaker until he made Get Out.
Right.
Yeah.
So you can't just discount because they're making comedy.
Well, also John Landis, too, right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
I mean, dude gave us Animal House and then turned around and gave us American Werewolf in London. So to say someone who's done comedy can't do horror, I think the two go hand in hand perfectly. I mean,
they are constructed. I mean, I'm going to geek out on you, but The Pie and The Chase.
Yep.
You know, film school nerds know what I'm talking about. You know, the chase and the pie. It's the same for comedy and for horror. So, yeah, they're constructed the same way. So it would make sense that a comedy filmmaker could do horror and vice versa.
Yeah, and they're two sides of the same coin.
Yeah. Yes,
they very much are.
Now, Jacob, you were talking about an upcoming movie called Mandy, right?
Yeah, this is probably my most anticipated genre movie of the year. It's called Mandy. It's directed and written by Panos Cosmatos, the son of George Cosmatos, who did Tombstone and one of my favorite aqua horror movies, Leviathan and Of Unknown Origin. And he directed another favorite of mine a few years back, Beyond the Black Rainbow, and this will be his sophomore feature. And already the buzz is really good on this one. It's already rocking 100% on Rotten Tomatoes for the festival circuit. And it stars another iconic actor, Nicolas Cage. And it just sounds totally wild. It's supposed to be about Nicolas Cage, who's like a veteran who settles down with his wife, Mandy, and in like the backwoods of Oregon in 1983, I believe. And then their romantic coexistence is interrupted by a violent cult that attacks them. And Nicolas Cage strikes back with a bloody vengeance. And all I've heard so far is that there will be a chainsaw duel with Nicolas Cage. So I'm fucking sold.
Wait, our first cinematic chainsaw duel since Texas Chainsaw Massacre 2?
No, Hollywood Chainsaw Hookers did one.
Oh, okay.
Linnea Quigley against...
was it Gunnar Hansen?
I don't think he was in the chainsaw duel, though. Someone will correct me. But Linnea Quigley was one of the chainsaw wielders.
Either way, Nicolas Cage, chainsaw duels, I'm in there.
Yep. Nicolas Cage, I mean, I don't know why he didn't just retire after 97, because after you do Face Off and Con Air in the same year, how do you top that? I mean, that's the 1-2 punch.
You top it with Bad Lieutenant, Portocol, New Orleans. That's how you top it. That's one of my all-time favorites.
Don't forget Lord of War.
Yeah. Matchstick Men.
No, I'm going to bring up The Wicker Man and then get stuff thrown at me.
No! I forget. How does he scream in that? No, not the bees! I just love that YouTube clip where it's all the shots of him punching someone in the face in that movie and then intercut with him screaming about bees and then it's done. It's like, yep, that's all I needed from that movie.
Just pure distillation. Oh, plus he was in Mom and Dad recently, that horror comedy by the guy that did the, Crank. It was the guy who did the Crank movies and, you know, the one about, like, the parents who get a virus or something that makes them want to kill their own kids. That movie.
Oh, nice. I haven't checked that one out yet.
I recommend it.
Are we in the middle of a Nick Cage-essence?
Very well. We very well could be.
He never went away, though. So.
No.
He's always there, and he will always be there. God bless him.
Well, he's got to pay off his bills somehow, you know.
Yeah. All right. Well, let's move on. Just in case any of you are wondering who the hell these three guys are, let's introduce ourselves. Jacob, why don't you go first? I saw he was drinking, so I threw him under the bus.
Of course. all right. Well, my name is Jacob Davison. I'm a senior writer for iHorror, big fan of all things genre, and I also am a staff member for Repertory Theater, so I like to screen lots of horror movies and stuff, and... do the good old-fashioned top threes in terms of genre to introduce ourselves. I'd have to say probably You know, and I feel like top threes don't necessarily have to be definitive, but just kind of how I'm feeling right now.
Yeah.
Let's see. Let's say Jaws, Big Trouble in Little China, and going for one of my favorite movies of recent, The Void, and also something cool that I saw recently that I really liked, I'd have to say, would be Annihilation, the new sci-fi horror movie from Alexander Garland, I want to say.
Alex Garland, yes.
Alex Garland, yeah.
Of Ex Machina fame.
Yes, yes.
And actually, in the news recently, now there's rumblings that he actually directed Dread instead of having just written it. Carl
Urban,
the
that.
Star.
Yeah, I heard that.
Actually, so, I mean, yeah, keep your ear to the rail on that one, because maybe this is actually, maybe Annihilation is Alex Garland's third movie.
Never know.
Either way, I love them all. Like, I saw Annihilation twice in theaters, blows me away each time. Like, it is really just out there, sci-fi horror done right, great cast, and, like, one of the most tensest scenes involving a bear I've seen in a long time. Or as Stephen Colbert would call them, godless killing machines.
I loved the first three quarters of Annihilation, and then anyone who's seen it will know exactly what I mean. The ending just goes off the rails, and you know I can see why people like it. It almost lost me, but that bear scene, I think that Alex Garland did that bear scene perfectly, because he could have played it for just sheer horror, and he went for nail-biting suspense. And so yeah, I think you're right. It's the bear scene is probably one of the scariest scenes of the year, and it's not even in your face scary. It's more what you're picturing probably is worse.
Yeah, and it's also one of those things, especially when you see a horror movie in theaters, you can really gauge a success by audience reactions. And I know it was a success because like the women sitting behind me screamed their heads off.
Yeah, that'll show it.
Yep.
Now, see, I feel bad because I've only seen Annihilation once, and I think I saw maybe 30 minutes of it. I fell asleep. It was a very late showing in my defense, and I was up very early that day. No excuses, no falling asleep in a theater. But I did wake up for that bear scene, and let me tell you something. When you're in that half-awake thing where you kind of think what's going on and your mind starts filling in the gaps, and it's kind of playing a different story than what's actually happening on the screen, and then suddenly you wake up to that bear scene, like, fully. That was that in itself was an experience. So I'm excited to go see Annihilation fully in theaters soon. That's for certain.
I did the same thing with The Last Jedi. I fell asleep for pretty much the whole casino scene. And then when I went back and saw it with the casino scene, I was like, oh, I didn't miss anything.
Yes, some people think that of that movie.
Let's move on. Korea, introduce yourself.
Hi, my name is Jonathan Korea. I'm a senior writer at iHorror, famously known as the guy who pretended to be Buffalo Bill on Tinder for 3.5 months. I, you know, write for iHorror. I also work in the film industry in various roles on productions across different platforms. Again, top choices for favorite movies is always a loaded question. But my go-tos are always Monster Squad, Reanimator, and The Thing. I just really love body horror and horror comedies, I guess, overall. Kind of want to sneak in Gremlins, but I think that'd be cheating and adding in another one. But a movie that I watched recently that really caught me off guard was Drag Me to Hell. I haven't seen that one since it came out in theaters, and Scream Factory put out a beautiful Blu-ray for it recently, and so I rewatched it for the first time in what was almost 10 years, and I couldn't believe just how much of Raimi was in it. It was like watching classic, like, early 90s, like Darkman, Army of Darkness, Evil Dead 2, Raimi, and it was so gross at times, like just absolutely gross, but it was just so refreshing having that kind of manic energy that he brings to a lot of his early films, and to have that back. And it also made me think, what the fuck happened to Raimi? Like, we haven't heard from him since. We have Oz, which was basically a remake of Army of Darkness, and that's about it.
Is Drag Me to Hell after his Spider-Man movies?
Yes, that was just a little bit after Spider-Man 3, if I remember correctly.
Yep. I feel like that was him kind of going like, all right, I can't do the studio thing anymore. I got to do my own thing real quick, go back to my roots. And then, I mean, he's done Ash vs. the Evil Dead, you know, the pilot, and is producing that, as well as producing other TV, like the Spartacus shows and all that. But I want to know when he's going to get back in the director's chair and give us some more of Drag Me to Hell, like, movies.
Yeah, are you out there, Sam? Tell us when.
Yes, please.
We're going to get more like Drag Me to Hell.
I mean, he's still working with, like, Ash vs. Evil Dead.
Which is a phenomenal show. It's one of my favorites on right now. Season 3 is really upping the ante in so many ways, even teasing that they're going to face off the biggest Deadite yet this season. So I'm pretty stoked about that.
Yeah, I have to say this season has probably been one of my favorites of the series so far.
And it's the first season I didn't see the season premiere in a theater, so I feel like I'm missing out.
Oh, nice.
It's a really theatrical show. Last year they did a week run of that O.J. Simpson documentary just so it could get be eligible for Oscars, and they tried to do the same with Twin Peaks this year.
Right.
They should do that with Ash vs. Evil Dead. They'd just have people sit there for 8 hours or so, and people would do it. Honestly, I think there's enough fans of the show that I think people would, you know, spend a Saturday, you know, watching an entire season.
Oh yeah, definitely. Especially if you got at least one of the stars to show up, people would go in droves every time they would have the premiere episode for the season play in LA. The theater was always packed for it, whether it was at the Grauman's or at the Egyptian. It was always a great time.
No doubt.
Yep. Well, my name is James J. Edwards. I am a film critic, not just horror. I do everything. I am also a senior writer at iHorror. I do the Tightwad Terror Tuesday column that you guys get all your free movies. And I'm also the guy who got crucified for my fringe horror list a few years back. And I will still fight anyone who does not consider The Hateful Eight a horror movie, because it turns into an episode of Tales from the Crypt by the end.
No.
Anyone who doesn't think it's a horror movie has not watched all 3 hours of it. Which also does explain why fringe horror is my thing, because I watch, you know, I love movies of all types. And I say my top three horror movies. Number one is always Dead and Buried, the 1981. It's a zombie movie. And I hate zombie movies, but this one's awesome. Gary Sherman, and I think Dan O'Bannon.
I was about to say, from the writers of Alien. Yeah. That was like their follow-up.
Yeah, fresh off of Alien, yeah. My number two is Alone in the Dark, not the Uwe Boll turd fest, the slasher with I think it's 1982. Jack Palance, Donald Pleasance, and Martin Landau. And the guy who plays Murdoch is in it.
Nice.
It's kind of at the beginning of the golden age of the slasher, so it hadn't been polluted yet, but it's just a great, you know, lunatics escape the asylum, and it has a hockey mask well before Friday the 13th Part 3.
God damn.
And my number three spot, I mean, you were cheating by putting two. I cannot decide, so I'm gonna put two in there. Event Horizon.
Nice.
Is my number three. The first time I saw Event Horizon, I knew nothing about it. It was a friend of mine who worked at a movie theater had called me up and said, hey, we're going to see this movie tonight. You want to come? And I'm like, sure. I got nothing else to do. I didn't know a thing about it. Scared the crap out of me. It's like Hellraiser in space. And it's been one of my favorite movies ever since. And that's tied with, and this is going to get a lot of ohs, but What Lies Beneath, the Robert Zemeckis, Harrison Ford, Michelle Pfeiffer haunted house movie from right around the turn of the century. I think it's 2000.
Yep, I believe that was 2000.
Yeah.
Yeah. So speaking of guys who do comedy that moved over to horror, although people will argue how effective What Lies Beneath is as a horror movie, but I'll fight them too, because I think it is really effective as a horror movie.
James is just in a fighting mood almost constant.
Yep, just right off the bat, anybody who wants to can pick a fight with James.
Yeah, just come down to the studio.
And actually, I think that Korea and I are going to fight because we both saw Thoroughbreds.
Yes. Yes.
Which I loved, but I'm the fringe horror guy. Thoroughbreds is, if you're not familiar with it, which it hasn't gotten a very big push, so it wouldn't surprise me if you are. It's kind of a dark comedy with Olivia Cooke and Anya Taylor-Joy. Is that her name? Anya Joy Taylor? The girl from The Witch.
And she was also in Split.
Her. And also, it was kind of a gut punch to see him up there, Anton Yelchin. This might be his last movie. I've heard a lot of comparisons of Thoroughbreds to Heathers. No, it's not Heathers. It's more Wild Things.
I'll give that comparison. See, James loves this movie, which I get. It's one of those movies where I don't hate it. I don't think it's a terrible movie. I was just bored out of my mind for a good portion of it. And one of the things that really annoyed me about the movie is I saw a lot of advertisements for it due to social media. And they all kept saying it's American Psycho meets Heathers, which in my book sounds like the ideal movie. But I also am very weary when it comes to when they use, pull quotes where it says like it's like X meets Y, because a lot of times it's often not. So,
like Hellraiser in space?
Huh?
Like what I said, Hellraiser in space for Event Horizon?
But that actually made sense. That actually works. The whole Heathers and American Psycho thing, I don't think really works with it. Wild Things, I would give it that. I would say it is very much so in line with that. The whole movie as a whole feels like someone's trying to make an A24 film without trying to make an A24 film, which, and one aspect I'm kind of excited about, but also it just felt flat. A lot of what was going on was very boring. Their lives were boring, and yet that wasn't part of the critique. If that was a part of the critique and was a part of like why the movie was made, I think I would have enjoyed it a lot more. But ultimately, I just felt like the screenwriter of it was just waiting to get to these moments where Olivia Cooke's character could say these very angsty quotes. Like something that you would see, I'm calling it now, within a year, you're going to see Thoroughbred t-shirts at your local Hot Topic with a screenshot from the movie and quotes from Olivia Cooke in it, because it just felt like it was going to the next quote to the next. Outside of that, though.
She had some good quotes, though.
Yeah, but I could just.
He broke out the notebook that he's been saving him up for.
Yeah, I mean, I could just picture every high schooler wearing those shirts. But other than that, the performances were great. That was an amazing cast. Those three actors were, not only were they all young actors, but they were at the top of their game with it. So it made it kind of better. But ultimately, I just left the movie kind of feeling eh.
I have yet to see Thoroughbreds, but it's been on my list, especially because I'm a big fan of Anton Yelchin. So I guess once I see it, I'll be the tiebreaker.
All right. So let's move on to our inaugural topic, which is timely, as we are recording this at least, the Oscars and horror at the Oscars. As you've probably heard by now, The Shape of Water took Best Picture and Best Director. And also Jordan Peele for Get Out won Best Screenplay, which thrilled me because it's a great screenplay. Yeah. It's such a smartly written movie. I was really happy for him, too. So, anyway, horror at the Oscars. Do you guys think that we're turning a corner, or do you think this was a one-off?
I think we're turning a corner. Going into that, I feel like horror has really been making waves the last several years, which is the thing, though, that horror has always been a linchpin to movies as a whole, going as far back as the Universal monsters like Frankenstein and Dracula saving Universal Studios in the 30s. But, the last several years, like Jonathan was saying, A24 movies have been really big, especially on a critical scale, like The Witch, It Comes at Night.
Ghost Story.
A Ghost Story, yep. Yeah. And, yeah.
The Killing of
like,
a Sacred Deer.
Sorry?
The Killing of a Sacred Deer.
Ah, yes, yes.
Yeah.
And outside of that, I feel like there have been a lot of big indie horror movies like The Babadook and It Follows. And, just like every year, I feel like there's a independent or kind of genre movie that really captures the public's attention. And, you know, I feel like horror is finally getting some mainstream recognition.
See, I don't know, because my whole thing is this conversation was being had in the early 90s with Silence of the Lambs. If you saw a lot of news articles from that time, you know, Silence of the Lambs was sweeping the Oscars.
It took the big five.
I was about to say, it's one of the few to take all five of the big ones.
It's one of three movies, and it was the last one to do it. Yeah, best picture, best screenplay, leading actor, leading actress, and director.
But
those are the big five.
Which is fantastic. It's an amazing movie. Criterion's new Blu-ray is absolutely gorgeous for it. But I feel like we are in a new renaissance of horror films that are kind of becoming more artistic, kind of putting a bit more merit behind that, which is great. Horror should be getting that. And you're also seeing a lot more discussions about horror being discussed as art. A lot more people are talking about Romero's films and their political sides to it. You know, these discussions are coming up more and more, and I think that's fantastic. But honestly, I do not see the Academy really taking them serious. I mean, even if you look a few years ago, when they expanded the Best Picture to include more titles, there were a lot more genre films. They were all sci-fi and a couple comic book. But for the most part, horror isn't being represented there. And I think it's because at the end of the day, people in the Academy are still in the old mindset of not really giving horror its due. They still view it as a kind of a thrill, a popcorn type movie. And yet they still give Academy Awards to like Suicide Squad for costume, which blows my mind. But I am glad that we're getting to the point where we are having these movies where you kind of can't leave them out. Get Out is not a movie that could have been silenced. People wouldn't allow it. Mm-hmm. The film for itself was speaking massive volumes. Shape of Water was just such a beautiful movie that it was hard to ignore that one as well. And first of all, Guillermo del Toro should have won for Pan's Labyrinth anyways, years ago, but I'm glad he is getting recognition with this one. But I just feel like it's going to take more time than what's happening now. And that's just, you know, kind of allowing the older members of the Academy to kind of be flushed out. Not flushed out. We don't need to revolutionize against them yet. But, you know, just as they get replaced, we're going to have more open-minded people coming in to allow for things. That's not just horror. I mean, there's other things that the Academy ignores. I mean, the diversity push that happened a couple years ago, that was a huge thing as well. So I think we are seeing some change. It's just going to take some time.
Well, I remember hearing like just a couple weeks ago of there was some Academy. It made all the news sites, so you guys probably saw it too. There was some Academy member who was anonymous, but he said that he hadn't even watched Get Out because it's not, quote, an Oscar movie, which... Something as important as the Oscars, if you're not going to watch all nine, don't vote. If you're not even going to give something a chance, you know, like this guy for Get Out. And I think, I don't know if it was a guy, it might have been a woman.
Right. But
I think that the move towards horror being legitimized at the Oscars has been happening for a few years. Mad Max pretty much swept. Mad Max Fury Road, which that's fringe horror, but come on, horror fans loved it.
Right. How could you not?
It swept the tech awards. I mean, you know, once it got up to the big five, you know, then it started losing to other things. But I mean, I was just happy that, you know, a Mad Max movie 30 years after the original, you know, George Miller's bringing in all these awards. I think he should have got Best Director, though.
Oh, hell yes.
And also, agreed. Ex Machina won Best Visual Effects. You know, that's all it won. And I think it was, you know, one of the best movies of that year. Actually, it was number two on my list to It Follows, which didn't get nominated for anything, but that's because it was It Follows. But even Nightcrawler, which, you know, yeah, I'm the fringe guy, fight me. I challenge anybody to tell me Nightcrawler's not a horror movie. I don't know if you guys have seen that, the Jake Gyllenhaal.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, my, it's...
phenomenal acting.
That was not... I mean, that was given the nomination, the Miss Congeniality nomination for Best Screenplay, I think. It didn't get nominated for anything. So... You know, I guess I'm defeating my own argument saying that Nightcrawler, the best movie of 2014, didn't get nominated for anything. But I think that this wave I think it's been happening for a few years. And as horror movies are getting better, and also more diverse, not in in terms of, you know, race or gender, just more diverse as in it's not a killer in a mask chasing kids around a campsite. You know, as you get more creative horror movies like Get Out or The Shape of Water, I think you're going to see more awards for them.
Yeah. I mean, and as you said, it's about diversity because it's no longer just being like, oh, what hasn't been a zombie yet? You know, like Zombieverse. It's like, oh, Zombieverse because nobody has done Zombie Beavers yet. I mean, we still love those movies. We still want to see them. But at the end of the day, when it comes to being taken serious critically and being a part of that discussion, being the horror, the genre expanding outside of that helps a lot too. So like getting movies like Killing of the Sacred Deer and Get Out, Shape of Water. I mean, Shape of Water is more of a romantic fairy tale than anything, but at its core, it still has those horror elements.
Yeah, just a quick aside on that, in that, yeah, I guess Shape of Water isn't necessarily a horror movie, but being so rooted into Creature from the Black Lagoon, it definitely shares the same DNA as those types of horror movies.
It's got a sea monster. So there are horror elements to it. But yeah, it's not it's not an in-your-face, boo, scary, you know.
Yeah, plus... plus, it kind of goes into the, again, you know, kind of fairytale rooted theme of man is the greater monster.
Right. Mm. Oh.
Yeah, yes. Michael Shannon's a scary dude.
Where was he with best supporting actor?
Yeah.
Well, he was in a bar in Chicago watching his movie win. Yeah.
Which is badass. I mean, it's I think he was there because he's directing a play or he wrote a play. He was there for business. Mm. But still, I think that just shows how badass Michael Shannon is to just sit in the bar and drink. But Richard Jenkins, I thought, was robbed of Best Supporting because him in Shape of Water was absolutely phenomenal. Even my girlfriend turned to me and she went, "Who is that guy?" I went, "Oh, sweetie, we need to watch some movies." I mean, Richard Jenkins was in Kong Skull Island, though, so let's not forget that.
Yes.
Oh, yeah. How could I forget?
Oscar-nominated Kong Skull Island.
What was that nominated for again?
Visual effects.
Yeah.
And it should have won. That had great visual effects.
Yeah, man. Those monsters were outstanding.
Yeah. Those, what were they? The Skull Eaters or...
Skull diggers.
Where did Doug? I thought it was Skull Crushers. Is it Skull Diggers?
Yeah, I remember it being something ridiculous. If only for that one line John C. Reilly says, like, now that I say it out loud, you know, that was a fun movie.
Oh man, I love that movie. I saw it in IMAX, ooh, and it was worth it.
That must have been great. There are some movies that you got to see on the biggest screen possible, and if it involves giant anything. Like, I don't know about you guys, but I'm excited to see Rampage on an IMAX.
Yes.
I know I already am anticipating it not being good, but fuck it. I want to see a gorilla just smashing the side of a building on the biggest screen possible.
I'm with you. I was a big fan of the video games, and I think they went kind of the best way they could with adapting it to the big screen in that, you know, just going straight to the point. Animals turned into giant monsters smashing up cities, and you got The Rock and... Jeffrey Dean Morgan doing their thing.
Yeah.
Like, it's like Jeffrey Dean Morgan fights a giant wolf monster thing.
James, you actually played the games in the sequels, right? I think you were talking about it the other day.
Yeah, the original Rampage, I actually loved that game. A friend of mine and I would go down to the arcade. You know, that's how long ago it was. It wasn't even a console. We would go to the arcade, throw quarters into this thing. And I would play as the wolf, and he would play as the ape. Because we always needed a Godzilla. We always needed a lizard. It doesn't sound like Rampage is going to be as faithful. It's not going to be, you know, I mean, it's not going to be climbing up buildings, eating women or anything. You know, it sounds like it's in a jungle, which is cool as long as you get the ape, the alligator, and the wolf. But I remember when we'd be playing that, as soon as the woman comes out and starts screaming, it was a race. You know, you race over there to see who was going to eat her.
And there was bonus points for that, too, if you ate the screaming woman from the top. Yeah.
Yes, there was. That's why there was always a race.
Time will tell. Maybe they'll throw that in to the movie. Which is the thing, though, is that, you know, like the Rampage games were, you know, just kind of fun games. I don't think there was too much they could adapt into a feature-length movie.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, as long as in the sequels they address that in the sequel games, they got more ridiculous with the animals. I think there, you said there was a lobster, like a giant lobster creature at one point. There was... It seemed like they were trying to go through, like, all the animals. Like, what can we make big? You know?
Yeah, just any animal turned into a kaiju is cool. That's all there is to it. Which reminds me, back on Guillermo del Toro, very excited for Pacific Rim 2.
Oh, yeah. Pacific Rim 2 looks like a lot of fun. If you're a fan of giant kaijus fighting giant robots, I mean, fuck, you already have a ticket and you're seeing it in IMAX.
That's me.
Yeah.
Something I wanted to talk about back on our awards discussion, in terms of genre and movies for potential nominations, like, is there anything you've seen this year that you think could be up for nomination or anything coming up that you think has a shot? Because on both ends, as I discussed before, I saw Annihilation, was a big fan, and I think it may have a shot at that kind of level of critical acclaim. But the big one, I think the big thing that people are going to be talking about this year, especially as we talked about, you know, with indie horror and more artsy horror, Hereditary. Like, that one's been just the talk of the town in terms of genre and festivals.
I purposely went to the restroom during my screening of Thoroughbreds when the Hereditary... I knew it was the Hereditary trailer because I saw Toni Collette's face pop up.
Yeah.
And I don't want to see a single frame of that movie before I go in to see the movie. So I, you know, felt the wall on the way out with my eyes closed because I didn't want to see a trailer. I cannot wait for Hereditary.
Dude, Trey has been... Trey, one of the writers for iHorror, he's been raving about that, like...
You saw it at South by Southwest just last week.
Yeah, a couple of days ago. He's just been absolutely over the moon with that movie. So I'm excited. I did actually stay for the trailer when I saw Thoroughbreds because I'm an idiot and don't know what's going on half the time. And so, like, about halfway through the trailer, it dawned on me. I was like, oh, this is the trailer for Hereditary. Oh, what is going on? And it was just, like, a lot of, like, weirdness. And I'm trying to, like, kind of push a lot of it out of my head so I can go... You know, when it comes out, to see it with a clear mind. But wow, that movie looks just all kinds of what the fuck.
Yeah, I think the most common praise for it is that they say it's like watching a full blown nightmare. So without going too deep into it, I mean, that is very high praise for a horror movie like that. And I mean, if it's doing as well as it is with the festival circuit, I imagine it'll do quite well once it's released to the general public.
Yeah.
And I feel, and like I said, you know, every year for the past several years, there's been a couple or one big artsy indie horror movie that everybody talks about. You know, like, it was Babadook in 2013. It was It Follows in 2014, and let's see, The Witch in. Was that 2015 or 2016?
I think it was 2015, I believe.
It was 15, yeah. Yes.
Ah, but either way, yeah, like, there's always, like, the big artsy horror movie of the year, and I feel like that's going to be it, and considering what's been happening with the Oscars, you know, maybe it's got a shot.
I still think the big one from last year that really didn't get, it got a lot of praise, but not nearly enough, and it definitely should have been nominated, was Killing of a Sacred Deer. I finally watched that recently, and holy shit, did that make me... That movie finally convinced me, because In Bruges was close, but that movie convinced me that Colin Farrell can act. Like, like, he's always been fun, loved him in Minority Report, heck, even had fun with him in Daredevil, but he was, like, the one watchable part for me, at least. But when it came to Killing of a Sacred Deer, like, just the whole movie as a whole, I felt sick. Like, I was like, it was like experiencing a fever dream, you know? And I was so sure that, of, like, one thing. And then when the end finally came up and they were discussing, like, why all of it was happening, I was like, okay, I kind of saw that coming, but I was thinking it was something else, just because the overall weirdness and just uncomfortableness of the film had me thinking another way.
Mm. Killing of a Sacred Deer was one of my favorite movies of last year. I can see why it wouldn't be for everybody, because you have to know Yorgos Lanthimos' style as a director, and if you don't like things like The Lobster or Dogtooth, you're not going to like Killing of a Sacred. I mean, his style is very like deadpan, and I think he directs his actors to read like almost like you're reading cue cards. A surgeon can never kill a patient, an anesthesiologist can kill a patient, but a surgeon never can. Just this deadpan, sterile, emotionless delivery. So when something emotional does happen, it hits you between the eyes. There's one scene in Killing a Sacred Deer when, not to spoil anything, but it's when Colin Farrell's sitting down with Barry Keoghan, or is that how you say his name?
Yeah.
And he's explained to him what's happening. And there's parts in Barry Keoghan's delivery. I think his name is Martin.
Martin, yeah.
There's part of his delivery where he kind of cracks as he's talking to him, and it's so powerful because the rest of his delivery is so on the nose and just so deadpan. So, when he does get to a point where he shows a little bit of emotion, you're like, whoa, this kid means it.
Yeah. First of all, where did they find Barry Keoghan? Like, where did this kid come from? Because, holy crap, it was one of those performances that at first you're just like, you almost think that he can't act. It's one of those type where it's just like, he's not doing that well. And then, like, all of a sudden, by the end of it, you're just... I was blown away by his performance. It was absolutely incredible. Mm-hmm. And it was exactly... he fit so perfectly in that style, that deadpan delivery, that emotionlessness that really drove his characters, the horror of his character, even further.
Yeah, I actually missed out on Killing of a Sacred Deer, but it's on my list. And yeah, so anything else catch your attention, either coming up this year or that you've seen so far this year that you think could potentially get kind of the same accolades as Get Out or Shape of Water?
I don't know if it is going to be an Oscar movie, but I'm kind of excited for A Quiet Place as well.
Yeah.
Mm. Yeah.
I don't know. Supposedly, they're saying that there's the rumor that it is a Cloverfield movie. And if you see, that is a trailer that I did sit through at Thoroughbreds, and I can buy that. It looks like it takes place in the same universe as Cloverfield.
God, I hope not.
I don't know, because there is an untitled Cloverfield movie on the upcoming schedules for all of the PR companies,
right?
And I don't know if they just didn't take it off when God Particle became the Cloverfield Paradox, or if there is another untitled one on the way. It seems like any time, I think they made a joke that the Big Sick was a Cloverfield movie. I think, at this point, anything, Hereditary is a Cloverfield movie. Thoroughbreds was a Cloverfield movie. Didn't you know that?
Surprise, the new Conjuring film is actually Conjuring versus Cloverfield.
That would be kind of cool.
I honestly,
the Nun versus Cloverfield.
Oh God. But yeah, no, I've heard good things about it, and I am interested because it stars, is directed by, and written by John Krasinski,
Jim from The Office.
Jim from The Office.
And is it Emily Blunt as well? Is that his?
Yes, I believe that's
her. Yeah. His real life wife is also acting in it, which. I always love Emily Blunt. She's one of those actresses that pretty much convinces me to see any movie she's in, especially after Edge of Tomorrow. I mean, that was the closest we got to Linda Hamilton and Terminator 2 in any film since then.
Yeah, yep. Very true. I think it kind of follows a similar trends in kind of more artsy or... how do I put this? Themed horror, because the whole thing with the movie is that they have to be quiet, so there's practically no dialogue in the movie, and a lot of communication is done like signs and sign language and stuff like that, so be interesting to see how that plays out.
I can already see that potentially being nominated, I don't know about Academy Awards, but maybe other circles for sound editing. Because with a film like that, just that simple premise of, not having a lot of dialogue, it's going to rely very heavily on sound editing. So if the sound editing for that film isn't good, then that movie's fucked. But if it's good, then it should get nominated, because that's a tough task.
Yeah, and I should take a step back in that, I guess. we don't necessarily have to talk about movies that we think are going to go for a full-blown Oscar, but definitely there, I feel like there are some genre movies coming up this year that have the opportunity to get those types of awards, accolades, critical reception.
One that I think is going to get a lot of attention, I don't know if it's going to be for the right reasons or not, is Unsane. You've got Steven Soderbergh shooting on iPhones, and that one, I'm hoping he pulls it off. I have not seen it, but that is one that I think is going to definitely be under the microscope for a lot of people. The fact that a filmmaker of the stature of Steven Soderbergh is doing the Sean Baker thing, and he doesn't need $20,000 reflex camera. He's going to shoot on his, well, I guess it's an $800 iPhone. He's probably using one of the new ones.
Well, they're definitely using like thousands of dollars worth of equipment to stabilize that, to add lenses and options with the iPhone. It's not just like they took it out of his pocket and shot it for certain. I mean, Soderbergh wouldn't do that.
Yeah, Soderbergh probably. What Sean Baker did, he did use a prototype lens that is maybe a few hundred bucks when he did Tangerine that way. But also, that's the difference between Sean Baker and Steven Soderbergh, I guess. But if you look, because I've also accidentally seen the trailer for Unsane. I usually don't watch any trailers at all, but, damn you, MoviePass, making me watch trailers.
Right.
And Unsane almost looks like a found footage movie, kind of. I mean, the way it is shot, you can tell that it is done on the cheap. And hopefully that aesthetic is what is going to actually work for it.
But I'm not so surprised that it's Soderbergh doing that, because, I mean, he got his start shooting on DV tapes. With Sex, Lies, and Videotapes. He shot a lot of his early stuff on video and on DV. So, I mean, him kind of, it almost feels like he's going back to that route, just in a more modern, because, I mean, who the fuck shoots on DV anymore?
Yeah, maybe he has something to prove. I mean, he came up with the same crew, the PTA and QTs. He came through that Miramax school of filmmaking back in the early 90s. So I think maybe he is trying to take a step back and show what he can do with a more stripped down production. But I mean, like you said, he's probably using $1,000 software to clean his,
At the end of the day, it doesn't matter what a film is shot on. There could be a film made today shot on DV, as much as I shit on that technology. If, as long as it's a well-made movie, it doesn't matter, because trust me, I've been on sets where people are shooting with a Red Dragon 4K, and boy, do they like to talk about it when they do secure that, and then nothing else matches it. The script isn't good. They put all their money into the camera, so there's nothing for background, there's nothing for set design, there's nothing for lighting, and it just ends up looking bad. But you could also do the opposite, like Baker did, and shoot on your iPhone and just have an amazing script, put together an amazing cast, and just have, great direction, and come out with something that's incredible. So, I mean, another prime example of boasting about camera technology is my favorite punching bag, Muck. The only thing Muck in its advertising had going for it was, we shot on a Red camera and we have boobs. And it's like, okay, same with a lot of porn these days, but who cares?
Yeah, and I don't know too much about Unsane myself. I think I saw like a poster for it, but aside from that, the whole thing about the phone cameras. I don't really know too much else about it. Although I do think it's interesting the only other way I know that title is that it's the alternate title for Dario Argento's Tenebrae.
Oh.
Yeah, when it came to America and it was cut, it was called Unsane in the United States.
Is that actually even a real word? Or is it a different meaning than insane? Unsane? Because I guess insane would...
I just assume it's a marketing thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's like, oh, they're not insane, they're unsane. I mean, it sounds cool. But yeah, back at it. So anything else catch your attention on the slate for 2017 or 2018?
I hope Halloween is. Like, I legitimately hope that, you know, with these, and I think this is a good way to kind of bring it all together, you know, with these changes that we're seeing with horror films becoming more critical darlings and getting more recognition that way. And that more detention, not to mention the people behind it. I mean, David Gordon Green, yeah, he's done a lot of, like, comedies and things of that nature, but he's also done a lot of really well-made, like, independent films that were dramas, too. So I really hope that this Halloween movie kind of bridges that gap of, you know, the old-school kind of mentality of slashers, but also this more modern kind of attention to detail when it comes to filmmaking that can make it a critical darling. Like, how great would that be?
Yeah, well, that's the other thing too, that the original Halloween at the time was a huge financial and critical success. Like, it was a low budget indie horror movie, but it did really well with the critics, made a lot of money, and it would be great if you know, history repeats itself, and who knows, Halloween for Best Picture.
I don't know if the world's ready for that, but...
God, that would be great. I think we deserve a Halloween movie that, you know, gets close to... at least gets close to the caliber of the original, especially after having to suffer through 4, 5, Resurrection and H2.
Resurrection.
Now, I don't know if... I mean, maybe they caught the bug with Get Out, but I don't know if Blumhouse really is trying to go that route. I mean... They had Whiplash, who was up for a bunch of awards, and but that was a different kind of movie. I mean, I won't fight anybody who says that Whiplash isn't a horror movie, although there are some pretty horrific elements in it. But I don't know that Blumhouse is going for awards. So I think that they want to make the fans happy and make a bunch of money with Halloween.
Yeah, well, I mean, I'm not saying that they're, you know, specifically Oscar baiting or anything like that. It's just they want to make good genre movies, and they're making good genre movies. Yep. But back on Halloween, it is interesting, though, off of what Jonathan was saying earlier. Well, just that this new one is going to basically supplant every other Halloween sequel after the original. So basically, this is going straight from the original to this one. Two points. One, that I think it's cool, though, that they want to throw in, like, a bunch of kind of homages or references to those various sequels, and be interesting to see how they go about it. Like I said, Silver Shamrock. And two, there were a lot of people who were upset about this, but personally, you know, I don't think it's that big a deal. You know, they're doing I feel like they're just doing a different take, and, you know, I feel like they, you know, they're putting a lot of passion and effort into it. And, you know, I feel like we got to be frank that some of the Halloween sequels weren't as good as others.
No, I don't think a majority of the sequels were good, in my opinion, that is. I know a lot of people are big fans of the Nice trilogy, you know, 4, 5, and 6. I personally was not. I thought it just kind of became almost like a parody and knockoff of the previous films. Even Halloween 2, I felt, was just kind of like, I really wish they had done their idea of making each movie something different before Halloween 3. Yeah. Like, if Halloween 3 came out as Halloween 2, I feel like we would have had a completely different franchise, and we would have been better off as well.
Totally agreed. Because, that was the thing, you know, like, Halloween 3 came out to you know, turn things around, but back in those days, you know, it was all about slasher icons. So you know, when that didn't work out, they went straight to 4, which was the return of Michael Myers, as if to assure the fans, yes, Michael Myers is back. This one, are you happy?
Well, and also, like you said, the first two Halloweens were huge critical and commercial successes. So when I mean, I know I held a grudge against Part 3 for a long... It wasn't until, you know, I was probably in my 30s when I learned to appreciate it as the movie that it is. I mean, it's a great movie as long as you don't consider it a Halloween movie. You know, I mean, because people, and I've heard people say it all the time, that's the one without Michael, right? Well, yeah, but, you know, if it was just called Season of the Witch, or, I don't know, you know, Possessing Masks, or whatever the hell you want to call it, I think it would have, it probably would have enjoyed this the cult success it's enjoying today a lot sooner, had it not had that Halloween tag on it. I feel the same way about the new Strangers movie, which I don't know if either of you saw it, but... as a retro slasher, I really liked it. As a Strangers movie, I don't think it captures the legacy of the first one very well at all. Had either of you guys seen?
I gotta catch it.
I still haven't finished the first one. I started watching it a while back on HBO Go, and I fell asleep. This is going to become a trend, isn't
How
it?
Can me falling you fall asleep during movies. During the Strangers, it's one of the tensest movies ever made.
I do a lot of stuff during the day, so when I watch stuff at night, I get sleepies. It most of the time has nothing to do with the movie itself. But I did just pick up the Scream Factory Blu-ray, so I'm looking forward to checking it out sometime this week. So when I'm on the road, I have another movie to look forward to in theaters.
Yeah,
yeah.
I mean, yeah, Strangers Pray at Night is definitely worth seeing in theaters, but. I think I would have enjoyed it more if it wasn't a Strangers movie, if they, you know, called it something else and didn't use those masks. Because it's a cool little retro slasher. But the other thing that kind of, it's not contained like the first one. Part of the charm of the first one is they're trapped in that house. And, you know, they disable their car, and whenever they try to leave, you know, they can't get away. This one is kind of all over the place. You know, there's more, the world is bigger, which a lot of people probably like. But I didn't. For me, The Strangers is about home invasion, and it is, you know, you're stuck there with these three, you know, find a way. Although, how'd that work out for them in The Strangers? You haven't watched it, so I'm not going to tell you.
Yep. Either way, Pray at Night's on my list. But, but in general, I do think it's interesting, and I feel like it can work out more often than not when a franchise tries to do something a little different. But yeah, I am very interested in the new Halloween in October, because we don't even really have all the pieces. All we know is Jamie Lee Curtis is back, and The Shape is back, and
and The Slate is back too. Yeah. Don't forget the original Slate.
Oh yeah.
Are we gonna get an entirely new John Carpenter score, or is he just gonna recycle that famous motif?
You know what? After remember that they released a remix from Atticus Ross and Trent Reznor of the original Halloween theme. All I want now is the three of them to collaborate on this new Halloween movie to get something like old school Carpenter meets, you know, Girl with the Dragon Tattoo score. And ooh, I would.
Yes.
That would be an instant vinyl buy for me.
There's a point.
If they did that.
There's a point, I think, is either 5 or 6 minutes into that where it's with the theme. And I'm surprised. Maybe it was. I don't go clubbing like everybody else. But that loop that minute, and that should have been everybody's Halloween jam in the, you know, in the clubs. They should have been pumping that, you know, Reznor's Halloween.
I'd bump to that. Yep. I could picture myself in the club wearing a sleeveless shirt, you know, dropping Jaeger bombs everywhere, bump into that. Is that still a thing? Do people still drink Jaeger bombs? I don't
know. I'm sure they do.
Is that still a thing?
I don't know.
Okay, well, let's start winding this down, but there's one thing I want to talk to you guys about.
Yeah, of course.
There is a movie that I saw that is coming. They're starting to do the previews now, and then it's going to be VOD. Terrifier,
Terrifier. Oh, no. Okay. I remember what you're talking about. That creepy clown with the black and white.
Yes. He's the clown from All Hallows Eve. And in fact, Terrifier is kind of one of the shorts from All Hallows Eve fleshed out.
Wait. And which one's All Hallows Eve?
All Hallows Eve is the anthology. It's by the same director, Damien Leone. All Hallows Eve is just a bunch of shorts about this clown, basically. And Terrifier, it's fleshed out to a full movie. And it is so, it's basically these two girls who are at a party, and it's a Halloween party. And they stop in to a pizza place to sober up before they drive home. And there's this creepy clown you know, goes in the pizza place with him. And he basically just starts tormenting them. And that's all the story is. There's no story to it. Anybody who gets in his way, you know, the guys who work at the pizza place, there's an exterminator, there's a janitor, there, you know, anybody who gets in their way, they're done. It looks like, it's like an old H.G. Lewis movie. I mean, it's just blood, guts, goo, gore, you know, viscera. It's I hesitate to call it fun, but it is fun. In the same way that those, you know, Wizard of Gore kind of a thing. It's just it's a creepy one.
So it's a gore fest, but it's not like a torture porn thing like Saw.
No, it gets a little torture porny, but more over the top. Like, there are parts when I was watching it where I was seriously just going, how much longer are they going to show this? You know, it's not it's not shy about its gore, but I would put it more, you know, more Wizard of Gore, more H.G. Lewis than Eli Roth. You know, and there's much less story than Hostel or Saw or any of those, you know. It's
awesome.
It's basically these girls getting stalked by this clown, and it's 82 minutes, and it's probably about 15 minutes worth of story.
So it's like Mad Max, where it's like you get 15 minutes to set up the plot, and then just boom.
That's exactly
just goes for it the rest of the movie.
That's exactly it.
And I guess the important question is, any super memorable or creative?
Oh yes.
Without spoiling.
I don't want to spoil those, because those are the ones where, as they were happening, I'm like, oh, would you stop show? You know, I'm like covering my eyes, going, are you kidding me right now? You know, so yeah, it gets into some pretty dark territory.
Yeah, and these types of movies can be pretty fun. Like, I'm a big fan of the Hatchet series, you know, the slasher movies, because, you know, it's like very, because they're very much distilled slasher, it's a very distilled slasher franchise in that, you know, just Victor, you know, people are in Victor Crowley's swamp, and Victor kills them in the most over-the-top and bloody and crazy ways imaginable. Like, there was some pretty good ones from the last one, Victor, which was just called Victor Crowley. Again, I don't want to spoil, but yeah, there was one in particular that just made my eyes bulge out of my head.
I haven't seen Victor Crowley, but the first three Hatchet movies I'm familiar with, and some of the kills in Terrifier are like that. I mean, it's that same kind of thing, just like way over the top, you know, where you're going, enough. He's dead already. Why are you still doing this? You know,
no. And in the time that you've, you know, talked about this movie, just from what you've been talking about and what I found on IMDb about this film, it looks exactly what I would be looking for in a video store when I was a kid.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Just like that cover, the way you've been talking about it, some of these screenshots I'm seeing, there's like an old school poster on IMDb with like, a topless woman wrapped in barbed wire hanging from the top, and it looks like Art the Clown has a saw in his hand. Like, it just looks so much like, it looks like something that, like, old school walking through, and you see that on a beaten up VHS cover, and you're just like, all right, I'm sold. This is what I'm renting on Friday night.
It has that feel. It has that feel of a VHS that you found at a flea market that you've never heard of before, but you're looking at it and you're like, Terrifier, and you see the clown's face, you're like, yeah, this is tonight. It does
nice.
Have that
okay, well,
hidden gem feel to it.
Hmm. Okay, definitely put that on the watch list.
So this has been our first episode of Eye on Horror. We're hoping to keep this consistent.
Yeah, we'll work it out, but either way, happy to, you know, get this first show on the road with many more to come.
All right. Well, we are. Let's get out of here. For Eye on Horror, I'm James J. Edwards.
I'm John Correa.
I'm Jacob Davison.
And we'll see you next time.